Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. We didn't get the opportunity to talk to him on a regular Wednesday night, but you know what? Brian Broaddus refuses to not be on air with the KNC Masterpiece, and that's why we have him on with us right now. Tell all your friends to listen so you can be smarter at football listening to Brian Broaddus. How's it going today, sir?
Appreciate you, boys. Don't feel too smart today, man. A lot happening in the league, and so yeah, it's kind of a crazy day for us, you know, with the post taco stuff and trying to get some answers. But you know, maybe we got a few here under our sleeve.
What kind of answers are you looking for?
You know, I just was curious. You know, I'm always curious about the process of what, you know, when you evaluate players, you know, and what were you looking at? What were you thinking? Were you thinking about that you could change his could you change his personality? Could you make him a tougher guy? Did he have a heart? Was there questions about his heart? You know, all those things that you kind of wonder about a player. As a scout, you know, you never want to get in a situation. This is one that Will McClay is going to wear. And, you know, everybody's given Will McClay a lot of credit for the Zach Martins and the guys like that that they've had. The draft has been very successful with him, and Will McClay deserves some credit for that. But deep down inside, he's going to wear this one. And this is going to be the one that, you know, when you feel like that, you know, you look at your team, you look at your coaching staff, and they're trying to win games, and you're thinking, okay, did I do everything in my power to help my team? I feel like I've done a lot of things, say, you know, Will saying that, but you know, this is the one that, like, you know, you feel like you kind of let everybody down a little bit. And, you know, it's the successes are great. The failures are the ones that you look back again and say, you know, wow, I didn't do enough to help my football team there. And, you know, maybe next time something like this won't happen.
Well, as long as we're searching for answers,
that's what we do. We do autopsies all the time.
And I just don't
investigate and educate.
Okay,
absolutely.
I just don't want it to go down this same path. And I know it's only been two games, but what's going on with Tristan Hill? Where, like, I feel like people aren't even really talking about him. And that was your second round pick,
yeah,
but still your first pick.
Yeah. No. And Tristan Hill is going to get a chance to play this week. You know, and you know, they are a deep team. They tell you that. Sometimes they tell you things that you look at them and you go, okay, it's the same damn thing you tell me every week. But in this case, they do have a deep roster. They do have some veteran guys that can kind of play, you know, at that defensive tackle spot. So, you know, it's a little bit about trying to kind of get him acclimated to being in the National Football League. I don't think it's a deal where he doesn't have heart and desire and all those things. And, you know, I think he's generally liked in that room, you know, from what I've gathered. And, you know, I think it's one of those things where you have to say, you know, give him more than just an OTA, a training camp, and the first two games. But he's going to get a chance to play this weekend. And, you know, a lot of it has to do because, you know, Tyron Crawford is not going to be available for a defensive end. So they're going to have to figure out Robert Quinn likely to get the start over there on that right side with Dorrance Armstrong, Joe Jackson, those guys all kind of helping over there. But that leaves a hole at the nickel, and this is where Tristan Hill is going to play that under tackle for you against the Miami Dolphins, and hopefully, you know, you see something like you did last week from Devin Smith. You know, maybe it was something you didn't expect, and all of a sudden a guy steps up, makes a play or two, and now you're like, okay, he's on the right path. But, you know, this is one of those things where the guy works hard, he practices hard, you know, talking to people there and kind of seeing it with my own eyes. You know, I understand the struggles for this kid. You know, he's going to do things the right way. And so I'm more willing to say, okay, let's see what happens the Dolphins game, and let's see what happens the Saints game, and let's see what happens the Packers game. And if he can kind of get some momentum and kind of keep it in and be a part of the 46th in every weekend.
Broaddus, I'm going to try and keep it with this defensive line talk a little bit, not
sure.
And I guess around Marinelli, because you're saying that that McClay is going to wear that.
He's gonna wear it, yeah.
I do know, and you've talked about this before, the way that they build is they say, what do you need? And what do you like? What do you want? And then they give them, they go scout and give them the best options for this.
Right.
And I'm trying to, I'm looking, and I know we went back to 2014, Kevin.
Yep.
And that was kind of the first Will McClay draft. And then Marinelli's been here that entire time.
Right.
And they've gotten Tank and, I mean, Dorrance Armstrong out of the draft. And so is there something missing that Marinelli's asking for that he can't communicate? Or is, like you said, whenever you're interviewing and talking to guys, is there something that they're not reading?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I felt like that they probably read Taco wrong, you know, and, you know, it started to be very much a, when you looked at his coming out, you know, I know KT and Jeff and Dane Berger, myself, Dave Hellman, you know, we're all watching him play and we're thinking, well, he's just really a left end. If you think this guy is a right end, then I think you're a little bit mistaken here. You didn't really see the quick twitch and, you know, easy for me to say there, but yeah, you know, you didn't see that. You saw really a true left end, and, you know, but they'd already had a left end when you're looking at, you know, Lawrence, and, you know, maybe it was a situation where they were thinking, well, maybe we're not going to be able to sign Lawrence one day. Maybe this will be too much, and maybe we have to have a replacement in place. And I think they really got caught in a situation where they wanted Tack McKinley. And again, this is just Brian Broaddus talking. This is not, you know, me, you know, having a beer with Will McClay and kind of saying, oh, well, Will, what'd you think? You know, they felt like in that draft that the corners would stretch. They really did. And that's why they were able to get Cheeto and able to get Jordan Lewis. They didn't feel like the defensive end class could stretch very well. And, you know, Tack McKinley got, you know, the Atlanta Falcons jumped ahead of him and traded and got up there and made the pick. And that maybe took them a little bit off their game and, you know, and said, okay, well, we've got to have this end. This end is better than, you know, and sometimes you get in a little bit of trouble with that. I think if they go back and look at that, you know, I'm not saying that Will McClay is not prepared and the board wasn't prepared, but they were probably looking at a defensive end at that time and saying, okay, we've got to hit this end now and, you know, worry about the corners in the second and third round, which they did. So, yeah, it's one of those things when you do the autopsy, you say, okay, the process we felt was the right way, but the execution wasn't for what they were probably for what they were trying to, you know, accomplish. They felt like that Taco would probably be a better player, but he never was going to be a right end here. He was always going to be a left end, and, you know, maybe they misevaluated him too, thinking, oh, well, you could kick him down inside and he could play with some flexibility and play as an under tackle. You know, in this scheme, but that, you know, but then Taco never was really healthy. You know, there was always something wrong with him. And, you know, the one thing Rod Marinelli really preaches, and he will look at you dead in the eye and say this, is he goes, give me guys with toughness. Give me guys that I can count on toughness all day long. And, you know, I think that's where, you know, he's got a group of guys that are tough. He just got rid of one that he didn't think was very tough himself.
Hopefully they learned something from that. We got Brian Broaddus.
Absolutely they will. Yeah.
We got Brian Broaddus from DallasCowboys.com joining us right now. And one of the topics we discussed earlier was, does this team go in with the, hey, let's do what we always do mindset, and we're gonna run the ball and do those things that we've done in the first couple of games? Do they say, hey, we can work on a couple things against the Dolphins? Or do they just do the, hey, let's just go crush this team and get out of here?
Well, what you try and do is go out and destroy their will to compete. That's something, you know, but then again, you're in a situation where the Dolphins have some pride. You know, yeah, it's a 21.5-point dog and all that. But I've said this before, and I'm going to have a T-shirt made. It says the NFL is a strange lady, and it really is. And you just never know when somebody will rise up. You know, now, again, I thought that the Dolphins would have a really good chance in this game as far as making it competitive if Ryan Fitzpatrick was the quarterback. I just don't feel that way with Josh Rosen right now. I don't. Now that they made the quarterback change, you know, I think that this is one of those games where instead of the ball going down the field, the ball is going to go underneath. Can they rally? Can they tackle? You know, those are all the things. I mean, the Dolphins have a weapon, you know, in Devontae Parker. And, you know, now with Rosen, they're not going to be able to use him like he needs. So with Fitzpatrick, you're going to get 50-50 balls down the field. He'll throw four interceptions and he doesn't care. He'll just keep throwing the ball. So with all that being said, now you got Josh Rosen. It could be a very difficult, a very different game plan for how the Dolphins are going to attack you. Offensively, you're going to address four wide receivers in this game. Okay, their best personnel group has been 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers. So they're a little bit kind of caught in a hard rock in a hard place, if you want to say, because they just got, you know, they got four receivers to work with. Now, I could very well see this team going with some 12 personnel because the Dolphins had some problems with the Ravens in week one covering tight ends, 12 personnel with the two tight ends, one back on the field. So maybe you'll see a Blake Jarwin have a little bit more success. Maybe he'll become a little bit more involved in the passing game than what we've seen the first 2 weeks from the tight ends. Even though Jason Witten has a couple of touchdowns already, maybe you'll see some more infield stuff and make the Dolphins have to play that way. So, I think that Kellen Moore will come up with some ideas, the ways he wants to attack the Dolphins. They really have one rusher in Charles Harris, I think, that can cause some problems. And he likes to move around a little bit. He's listed as an outside linebacker, but he really plays as a rush end. So block him, you know, see what happens. Kind of take your chances. Last week, again, it's the Patriots. Brian Flores played clog and cover where he rushed three, dropped eight on Tom Brady and tried to make Brady throw stuff underneath. I'll be interested to see if he does clog and cover or does he say, I've got to come after Prescott, hope I can get some rush home and affect him like Washington did early in that game, where he had the unfortunate turnover early, but then everybody kind of settled down and some pickups were made and they were able to get the ball out like they needed to.
Talking with Brian Broaddus from DallasCowboys.com right here on 105.3 The Fan. Now, putting aside the obvious of like, well, you always want more talent. I certainly understand that.
We always do.
Yeah, we've heard the names Jalen Ramsey and Jamal Adams. Clearly, we'd be thrilled with either one. But
is Adams on the market? Is he, in fact, on? Has he been talked? I mean, or is he just because he took down social posts that we're all assuming that he's on the market?
I mean, I think it's more that.
Probably that. And you know how us media people work.
Yeah, let's talk about Ramsey then. But then again, you're in a situation, too, where, and they'll tell you this. They'll tell you, listen, we can't talk about players that are under contract.
Sure.
You know, that's kind of the way it is. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know what Jacksonville's doing right now. I mean, I just got done from working out and stuff. I don't know what this game's all about. I mean, evidently him and Doug Marrone kind of kissed and made up and all that. Who knows? Maybe tomorrow he'll be pissed off again. But, you know, you'd love either one of those guys. Okay, but what's the price of doing this? And, again, I'm not trying to be like Mickey – you know, and try and say, well, what's it going to cost? You know, why is he going to, you know, what are you going to do? You know,
that kind of stuff.
I'm not going to do that. But, if in fact the whole thing the other day, you know, when they were talking about, you know, when we talk about trade stuff, trust me, I've been on that pro personnel chair where people call you and they talk about these guys. They say, hey, yeah, we got Mika Fitzpatrick, and yeah, we're interested in trading him, and this is what it's going to cost and all that. But, you know, I really haven't heard anything officially with those other guys. But if you traded for those guys, yeah, that's not cheap. That's big draft capital, excuse me, and that's big contract is what that is. And I guarantee you that Ramsey, he'll hold out on you.
Yeah.
He will flat come in here and say, okay, yeah, we've got him for 3 years on a rookie contract, and we've got him on this and got – yeah, he'll do the same damn thing that Zeke did. After 2 years, he'll go, you know what? I'm tired of making $14 million, and you're paying that guy across from me $21 million? Nah, not today, boys. We're going to do something else here. So I think to me, I would personally try and do something with Byron Jones. That's just me. I know what Byron Jones is. I know what he is in that locker room. I know what type of player he is. Is he Ramsey? No, he's not Ramsey. I'm not going to blow smoke up your rear and tell you that. But I am going to tell you, though, you know, maybe if you can get him for what you'd like to get him for the price you'd like, maybe he wants to be here. Maybe he'll take a deal with what you got with Jalen Smith, and maybe he'll take a deal with what you got with Lyle Collins because he likes the team. He likes the atmosphere. He likes the coach. All those things make a lot more sense to me right now than taking a big old flyer on a guy that you know is going to be a pain in the ass.
Why do you think so many Cowboys fans seem to be so accepting of Byron Jones just taking off after the end of the season then?
Well, they shouldn't be. You know, you shouldn't be.
They are.
Well, because they feel like Owusie is going to step in there and be the next guy. That's the thing. And they're like going, whoa, wait a minute. Okay, we can lose Anthony Brown. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, maybe they're feeling like that Awuzie is like the first cornerback here. Maybe it's not Byron Jones, you know. And then that's, you know, I feel like, though, that, you know, the corner play here has been, and I thought in the summertime is one of the strengths of this team, you know. And last week, Awuzie, I think he had one tackle. I don't think, you know, they clearly went after Byron Jones in that football game. And Byron Jones was up to it, you know, the touchdown. Yeah, that's unfortunate. You get down there, back shoulder, good throw, good route. You know, he just didn't get around quick enough on it. But overall, I thought he played pretty well. But, you know, we shouldn't accept Byron Jones walking away. Byron Jones has done everything you've asked him to do. Go up and look how many games he's played. In that, of all the players in his draft class, look how many times he's lined up and played. I guarantee you he leads the draft class. I believe him and the defensive tackle at the Jets, Williams, I think those
Leonard
are the two
Williams.
Guys. Those are the two guys in the draft, that draft class, that have played the most games of anybody in that first round, of all those players taken in the first round. So Byron Jones has done everything you could ask him to do as a player. I mean, to make the position switch, to buy into that, to make himself a Pro Bowl player. Man, I'll tell you what, it's, you know, those are the kinds of guys you want.
Does it frustrate you at all? Like, I know this is not your primary job or role, but does it frustrate you at all then when Cowboys fans are so blasé about him?
Oh, again, I think it has to do with the other cornerbacks. I think they're more enamored with Awuzie and more enamored with Jordan Lewis than they are Byron. Again, Byron Jones does not say two words in the locker room. I mean, he is, trust me, one of my friends, my lady friends, asked me, hey, would you introduce me to a player? I would absolutely say no. I don't think I would. But I said, wait, I'd introduce him to Byron Jones. He's like one of the best guys in the world. Great in the locker room, personable guy, plays his rear off every week. So, you know, that's the kind of guy I think that we all kind of, you know, we kind of take for granted for how good of a person he is and what a great player he can be.
Well, we appreciate the insight as always, good sir.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys as well.
When will we not see the starters anymore this weekend?
The starters?
Yeah.
After the first drive in the third quarter.
You know what? It's funny, guys. I thought it would be an interesting game. I think the Dolphins have some pride. I really do. And, you know, I think Dave Hellman told me that Garrett's really only blown out 12, you know, in all his games, have only had 12 blowout games.
Whoa.
in his tenure. I mean, you could look that up. Hellman, I'd look it up because Hellman told me that.
Good point.
You know how that
yeah,
works. But he did.
Absolutely.
He was pretty adamant. I'm like, well, man, and the guy coached like 150-something games. He goes, well, yeah, he's only had 12 blow. So, yeah, and what happens is they might build a lead and then they give up touchdowns at the end. We've kind of seen that the last couple of weeks too. So, keep an eye on that as well.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. We'll talk with you next week.
Sounds good, boys. Thank you.
Brian Broaddus, you can always find his stuff on DallasCowboys.com. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, Corey tries to convince me and worry all of us that the Sports Illustrated cover jinx is in fact real.
I'm not trying to worry anybody.
Aren't you?
Huh? Just saying there's
next on the fan.
Evidence.
This segment of the KNC Masterpiece is brought to you by Frankel & Frankel. Have you been injured in an accident with a work truck or 18-wheeler? Well, call 214-333-3333 or check them out online at frankelfirm.com. Principal Office, Dallas, Texas.
All right, I know there are some doubters. There are some believers. And I think the one thing that I've learned in my extensive study about the Sports Illustrated jinx, the cover jinx, is that there are one of two things that can happen for you. Superior excellence or failure, right? I mean, like, and bad failure after you get the cover. Okay. And here's why, Kevin. And the Sports Illustrated, actually in 2002, they addressed the alleged cover jinx with a black cat on its cover one year.
Oh.
And they were like, hey, let's explain this whole thing. But there are common explanations of the perceived jinx out there. A lot of people think it's just a regression toward the mean of, hey, maybe you were great and you just kind of went back to being what you were, you know? But was it because of the cover? Was it because you bought into the hype about yourself? And Kevin, you asked, do you love seeing that? Oh, not always, because of the curse is what I'm afraid of the most. And we start with Eddie Mathews, who suffered a broken hand.
Baseball player?
Yes. He suffered a broken hand while the team's 9-game winning streak came to a close following him being on the cover of the magazine.
What year was that?
I was in like 19, I don't know, dude, whatever. 1954. This goes back, Kevin. It goes back from 1954 all the way till now, current day. There are over 150 occurrences of something going from great to bad for people that were on the cover. Now, there are 12 circumstances where it didn't go that bad. And here are the 12.
Oh, okay.
All right. Michael Jordan holds the cover record of 50 appearances. He's the greatest basketball player of all time.
He won 6 championships. And
Muhammad Ali.
Well, he did get suspended from the NBA for a couple of years.
Muhammad Ali appeared on the cover 40 times.
Ooh, he went to jail.
Vince Young also discredited the Sports Illustrated jinx by appearing on the cover of Sports Illustrated twice during the Texas National Championship season.
All right.
Emmitt Smith appeared on the cover the same week the Cowboys won Super Bowl XXVIII.
Nice.
I don't know which one that is.
It's 28.
Tony Dorsett appeared on the cover on the cover under the title Heading for a Heisman in 1976, the year he won the Heisman.
What?
I also will say that it said heading on it, and he has also experienced some head injuries, Kevin.
Oh, my God.
Andrew McCutchen was featured on September 2013, and he later won the National League MVP. The Seahawks won the Super Bowl. The Cubs appeared on it the same year they won the World Series. Kyrie Irving was on it as well, Usain Bolt, et cetera, et cetera. Again, that's 12, Kevin. There are over 150 different occurrences that have failed, all right?
Oh, no.
And I want to bring some of those to light. And I will start, Kevin.
We can't just talk about all the good things.
I am not going to be talking about...
Because I like talking about all the good things, because then you're like, yeah, see, Dak Prescott was on the cover. Now we're going to go to the Super Bowl.
I will start with October 24th, 2011.
Oh, no. This is son of
Nelson
a bitch.
Cruz I was on the it. Front of the SI.
Oh, I knew it.
For one of its World Series issues. But the biggest issue was that he botched that ball out in right field off David Freese. Number one. If you don't
is
believe.
Is this the only reason we're doing this?
If
segment?
You don't believe in curses, then you can curse me right now for bringing up Nelson Cruz.
You stupid piece
September
of, okay.
2008. Tom Brady, the quarterback, was on the cover of the NFL season preview in an ironic photo that showed Brady stretching with his knee, the skin of his knee being exposed. That week, to open the season, he tore his ACL and MCL against the Chiefs.
Because he let his knee be on the cover.
And missed the entire season.
Oh, my God.
Never expose your knees.
October 13th, 2003. Would the SI curse be a curse if the Red Sox and Cubs didn't fall victim to it?
Oh, is this from before Bartman?
2003, both teams were in their respective league's championship series. Both were on the cover of the Sports Illustrated, and both collapsed in miserable fashion.
Oh, my goodness.
November 17th, 2003, Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs were marching towards the playoffs, Kevin. Then they got the cover treatment. Started 9-0. How do you do that? How do you start 9-0?
Impressive.
Trent Green was graced. He graced the front of the magazine.
Was that their quarterback?
The team went 4-3, missed out on hosting a playoff game at Arrowhead Stadium, and lost to the Colts in the first round of the postseason. 1988, June 20th, Michael Spinks.
Oh, no. He got wrecked.
Yeah.
In like, what, 90-some seconds?
It was. He went into the ropes.
July 30th, 1984, Jack Lambert.
Oh, the
headline
football
for,
player?
Yeah.
Okay.
Man of Steel. He was plagued by turf toe injury in 1985 that led him to retire. Right after he was on the cover as the Man of Steel. August 7th, 1978, Pete Rose.
Oh, no.
Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hit streak is a baseball record that we think will never be broken, right?
Yes.
Sports Illustrated, in 1978.
They said Pete Rose would break it.
In the midst of a 44-game hitting streak, appeared on the magazine's cover. Guess what happened the week that it hit the newsstands?
Well, I know what happened because it ended at 44.
It ended at 44! Kevin, I go back to 1954, and from there on, in 1954 to 1960, that's what, a six-year period right there? There are 20 different occurrences that the Sports Illustrated curse... Hold on, let me read this quick. Oh, yeah, here you go. John F. Kennedy and his wife, Jackie.
Was he on the cover of Sports Illustrated? How could a trip to Dallas go wrong?
Are shown sailing off Cape Cod less than 3 years later.
Okay. That's a long time.
Is it?
I mean, not for me. If I died, then 3 years, I'd be like, oh, wasn't that long.
June 6th, 1978, Ken Norton appeared on the cover, this time before a title defense against Larry Holmes, who beat him
wrecked.
In a split decision by one single point.
Split decision by one single point.
I go to A.J. Foyt, appeared on the cover in 1981. Foyt goes for a fifth 500. Despite starting third, A.J. Foyt finished 13th.
Oh, but he lived. So that's good.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell me that he died.
He didn't die, dude. That could be very bad if these people are dying. Colby, have you found any evidence that leads you to believe that there is not a curse of the Sports Illustrated?
A lot of this stuff is old. You do not have any contemporary evidence to prove to me that the Sports Illustrated curse remains intact.
Well, so July 29th, Serena Williams was on the cover.
Oh, and then she lost in the finals of the U.S. Open.
So we also have Sam Ellinger being on the cover.
They're okay so far.
But, you know, they kind of lost that one game. You know what I mean?
November 16th, 2009.
Oh, no.
The Colts, Peyton Manning appeared on the cover inside the league's most cerebral quarterback. Inside the helmet of the league's most cerebral quarterback. The Colts ultimately lost that Super Bowl, Kevin, 31-17.
But at least then it's 10 years old, and yours is a college, so we have no contemporary professional football evidence that we're in trouble.
May 20th, 2019. Kevin Durant and Steph Curry were featured for a cover story on Inside a Golden Basketball Sunset, suggesting this could be the last major playoff run of the Golden State Warriors. Durant ended up suffering a leg injury that would keep him out of most of the NBA Finals. His leg exploded, Kevin.
Oh, no.
The 2019 NFL preview, the Browns are back with the Browns on the cover.
Oh, no.
Kevin, September 14th, 2017, three NFL players featured on the covers of the of Sports Illustrated. Aaron Rodgers, J.J. Watt, and David Johnson. All three had their seasons ended by early injuries. Johnson dislocated his wrist in week one. Watt suffered a tibial plateau fracture in week five. And Rodgers broke his collarbone in week six. All would be placed on IR. The Packers were eliminated from the playoffs in week 15 that year.
Okay. So, I mean, as long as there's not another contemporary example.
April 2016.
Yeah, that's still a few years
ago. Matt Harvey, Jake DeGrom, Jurius Familia appeared on the cover. Harvey would have the worst year of his career and undergo season-ending surgery. DeGrom had a mediocre season, not pitching his best, and also went season-ending surgery. While Zach Wheeler and Steve Motz were later injured and out for the season. Familia's save record was broken after 54 consecutive saves. And he was arrested for domestic violence.
Oh, no.
Kevin, do you not believe this?
Oh.
Do you not believe this? And that's a very near one, near and dear to your heart.
And then Colby showed me the other NFL preview issue that's not Dak and the Browns is the Steelers with Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, I was about to bring that one up.
So
these are contemporary.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. October 19th, 2015, Leonard Fournette appears on the cover with the tagline, "Thank you for the comparisons, but 5-0 LSU Tigers will do just fine." The Tigers lost three straight games from November 7th to the 21st, hey, knocking them out of the CFP contention.
Leonard Fournette's doing just fine tonight. He has 9 carries for negative 3 yards. That's a real stat, by the way.
Kevin, in May of
2015, why do you keep giving me more examples?
There was a headline, "Chip Kelly's Beautiful Mind" appeared on the cover. The reason was for the serious questionable moves made by Chip Kelly. The Eagles later fired Kelly as the team went 6-9 and was well out of the playoff race. Kevin, it just continues to stack up. That being said, what did I bring up earlier? Michael Jordan, Muhammad Ali, Emmitt Smith, Tony Dorsett, Pete Rose. There are, not Pete
Dak
Rose, I'm sorry.
Dak effing Prescott.
If Dak Prescott can break the curse, he will go on to excellence.
The all past right? three NFL covers are Dak Prescott, then Juju Smith-Schuster, then the Browns. So, as of right now, ain't nobody doing really good with the covers except for Dak Prescott. So, okay. Let's see if something...
His excellence change it all?
We have that for now. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, would a murder in UFC or boxing, like if somebody got killed in the ring or the octagon, change your viewership? And if so, how? We'll talk about it next right here on The Fan.
This segment of the KNC Masterpiece is brought to you by Bill Dickinson's Group of Dealerships. You can check them out online. That's DallasTruckWorld.com, Mesquite Mitsubishi is MyMitsu.com, and of course there's Southwest Kia at SouthwestKia.com.
If you saw a death happen in a sport live, would that deter you from continuing to watch said sport? Now, Kevin, Conor McGregor is a fighter.
That is correct.
And so is it Masvidal? Masvidal?
Jorge Masvidal.
Jorge Masvidal. He said he won't fight Conor McGregor because he doesn't want a count of murder.
He said Dana White won't sanction that fight because they don't want a count of murder.
They don't want a count of murder on his record.
So Masvidal defeated Ben Askren in his last fight. Ben Askren had been undefeated in the history of his mixed martial arts career, and it was the fastest knockout in UFC history. Masvidal rolled out there and hit Askren with a flying knee and dropped him in 5 seconds. I would be really fascinated to see this fight because both Masvidal and McGregor like to throw, and that's the kind of fight that I think McGregor would like. In the meantime, Masvidal is going to fight Nate Diaz in the main event, UFC 244, in what is essentially being dubbed the BMF fight.
Baddest mother.
Yeah.
Because
it's not for a title, but...
They need to make that belt, though, right? Make
that
the title.
Sure. And they could.
They
absolutely
are. They are making that.
And they're getting trademarks, is what Corey had told
me. Three different trademarks for it.
And so, and the make of this the main event at MSG. So obviously they have a lot of faith in it. And in fact, I just heard Dana White in the last 24 hours, they're talking about putting the Canelo fight head to head with that. And he said, good, go ahead and do that. You'd be effing crazy to do that. So, but the thing about Masvidal is, like, let's say that did happen. Let's say that he killed Conor McGregor in the octagon. So what my question would be is, especially for people that watch UFC or boxing, and like, you know, we talked with Reggie about this before the show. He's not really into mixed martial arts, but like, let's say you were into mixed martial arts or you were into boxing. If you were watching a fight where someone died in the ring or the octagon, would that impact your watching patterns? And more specifically, what would it do to your watching patterns? Because I think it would be foolish to just say, well, nobody would watch as much then. Really?
No, I don't know how it would affect mine. I don't think it would affect it at all, actually. Now that I just took a moment to think about it, I don't think it would affect.
Really?
If that was something I already enjoyed watching, it would be, oh, man, that was tragic. But I guess the way I look at it, it would be if it was somebody that was close to me, or in my family, or in my group of people that I consider to be friends, and that were to happen to, that would make it personal, and that would, of course, change everything about my viewing. But with it not being, with it being almost the TV personality or somebody from afar, it wouldn't, I would still consider it tragic. I would still consider it, man, that was awful, but I wouldn't stop watching the sport because of it.
From the 972, 500 boxers have died in the ring since 1884. This year, Maxim and Hugo died on July 24th and 25th after their fights. It's the sport. And as a warrior, I will never stop watching boxing.
You know what's really interesting about that is mixed martial arts has been around since 1993. And up until, I do believe, the last year, I don't think anyone had ever died in mixed martial arts. So, like, the idea is that...
Is it because nobody wanted to push it that far? Or because they just got lucky?
I mean, probably a mix of both, because you can't say they didn't want to push it that far. Because if you go back to the original incarnation of the UFC, did you know? I was watching a documentary about the UFC, really fascinating. Is there was at one point a discussion that around the octagon would be a trench that was essentially a moat filled with sharks. And then there was also discussion to have an electrified fence on the top of the cage. So, like, in terms of not going too far, no. They were like, the hell with it. Let's just do all the things. And there's definitely a time where it was just pure insanity. Like, I saw a guy win a fight by punching another guy straight in the balls 20 times. And that used to be the way it was. So the fact that nobody died back then, I have to admit, is pretty astonishing.
Are they bigger and stronger fighters now?
Yeah.
Faster?
And it's much more regulated. But the only reason they regulated is because they were like, well, we wanna be able to be everywhere. Because The thing is, they got taken off pay-per-view. They were banned in, I think, all but one state. And, you know, John McCain has the very famous line on the Senate floor. He said, it's essentially human cockfighting. And people make fun of that now. But at the time... He wasn't wrong about that. Like, I've seen all of the old UFCs, and he's not wrong about the nonsense that was going on and the ridiculousness of it all. But it's interesting that not very many people have died in mixed martial arts, and that's why I was curious if it would change people's viewership. Would some people watch more? Like, some people get into mixed martial arts because they want to see someone, like, get destroyed. And if somebody literally got killed, like, would people tune in more to the next one?
Yeah, that's interesting because I don't really want to watch fighting like that often because I don't have that anger issue built up inside of me you guys all have.
Definitely.
But somebody did say, I mean, Randy Johnson killed a bird and we still watch baseball. And I mean, yeah, that's a good point there.
Exploded that bird.
That's the most amazing sports video I think I've ever seen.
Ever. I had a moment where a buddy of mine sent me a link and said, Corey, you got to watch this. And I was like, okay. And I started watching it. And right as the bad thing happened, another guy ran in and said, hey, do not watch this. And it was two guys getting their heads cut off. One with like a knife.
Oh my God.
And the other with a chainsaw. And Kevin, I'll be very honest. I was not right after that for a little bit because I'd just seen what I saw and it was real. It was Mexican cartel stuff. It was real. And my mind just like, what did I just see? And I wasn't right. And I can't say because of that moment, I can't say that if I happened to be watching a game and I saw that happen, that I wouldn't think twice again about what's going on. But I also am not like, that's not my thing. I'm not watching football I'm really not watching. And I wonder this about a lot of people. Are you watching football to see somebody get destroyed? Or are you watching football to see the guys that wear the uniform that you like scoring points so that you can move on to the championship?
I really am not watching to see somebody get destroyed as much as like I want my team to win. And it's kind of, I don't know if it's exactly the same thing. I was just thinking about like mixed martial arts. I do enjoy the skill level of it. And I like it when there's like a high level fight going down. You know, when Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier were fighting and you're talking about people who were in the Olympics, won NCAA national champion. This is like high level. And I wanted to see whose skill would prevail. But then there's other times where they have fights on the card that you just know it's two guys who like to stand and trade. And you're like, I'm here for that too.
I did see, I did watch a fight one night. I have no clue what the dude's name is. He had hair that came down to here, and he just sat there and he punched and punched, and this, he just got lit up. His face was just covered with blood at the end of the fight. But you know what? He never fell.
Yeah.
The dude never gave up. He just sat there and he was getting punched and punched and punched, and he just kept going. And I was like, man, I got a ton of respect for that guy right there. Like, that was pretty crazy to watch him just keep coming after this guy over and over and over. But if I happen to see something like that, if I happen to see somebody just get their bell rung and then they're dead.
Yeah, I don't want to
see that. I don't
know
if I could do it.
I don't want to see that either. But then Reggie was asking me, like, what don't you, like, to a certain extent, want to see some things like that? And, like, I want to see somebody get knocked out and then, like, come to their senses. So I guess we're just kind of like, I definitely don't want to see anybody die. But I also think, you know, I've been watching mixed martial arts for a really long time. I've seen some people get really messed up, both, like, physically in terms of an injury or just get beaten down. You've seen people with hematomas. Mm-hmm. I saw a guy's ear explode once watching mixed martial arts, and none of that has deterred me. So I do kind of wonder if somebody literally got killed from the sport, would it change my watching it? I don't know that it would.
Owen Hart, you didn't see it.
And that's
a very different thing, right?
I think that might have changed a lot of things. So you go back, and this is one of the luckiest things. I know it sounds weird to say it like that, but just hear me out. One of the luckiest things to ever happen to the WWE was their use of the video package at Over the Edge in 1999. Owen Hart fell from the rafters because, well, supposedly he was really afraid of heights and he was fidgeting with his cord and accidentally pushed the emergency release cord. And that's why he dropped all. I mean, you've been to a stadium. You know how big those things are. And so he landed on, I've heard different things, the ring steps or the ring post. You know, but the point is, you didn't see that because they were in the middle of doing a video package to hype up that match. No video package means that probably would have happened live on air. And I have to admit, if I saw someone fly out of the sky and smash into the ring steps or ring post and die, I honestly don't know to this day if I would ever watch wrestling, because that is something that would have been so horrifying and unexpected. And it's kind of the same thing with MMA. I do not ever go into any of these fights thinking somebody could die. That thought never crosses my mind. So the moment that it did happen, that might change a lot.
I don't know that it would, right? Like, as Colby mentioned earlier, and I think this is a valid point, you're watching this for a reason, right? Like, there's some attachment to these things. And I think that it's very easy for us to say this in this moment, but in the moment when it happens, obviously it'll be tough. But then at some point, it's very easy for you to make that like some level of other, some level of anomaly. Like, this is not what always happens. This is just something that happened this one time.
And with MMA, I could certainly do that because it's been a rarity.
How often do you watch MMA without other people, like by yourself?
Not a ton.
So that's another thing too, right? Like, you correlate the viewing of some of these things with other people, like being social.
Sure.
It's a social event.
That's true.
If I've ever watched MMA, usually I've been around a bunch of friends drinking a lot of beer. So if I have the itch to be around my friends and drinking a bunch of beer, I'm probably not going to say, well, I saw that guy die, so, you know, I'm not going to hang out with my friends and drink tonight because they're watching the fight. So, there are other things that trickle in about it. But yeah, I think it changes you to see something like that happen.
Well, you also brought that up, and the party atmosphere, you know, somebody in that party is going to be like, hey, remember what happened last time? And then somebody's going to make light of that situation, and then it's going to lighten everything else up, and then everybody's back to having a party again.
And then we're desensitized to the human spirit, Kevin.
Man, do you remember those UFC tapes back in the day where they would just show, like, you know, the Gracies or whoever, and just this oddity of this one big sumo wrestler versus a karate guy or something? And I thought a few times, that guy's dead. That guy's dead. He's not getting up. And yet you still continued to watch it. Or I did.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we go around the NFC East featuring conspiracy theories, canceled radio shows, and genius bets. We'll do it next right here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.